Earlier this year, Philadelphia's Rodin Museum reopened after renovations and reinstallation, providing new access to the late Jules Mostbaum's significant collection of a range of sculptures created in the late 19th and 20th century. The Rodin has been administered by the Philadelphia Museum of Art since its opening in 1929, when Mastbaum's widow gave the museum and collection to the city of Philadelphia. Now WRTI's Susan Lewis looks at the life and work of Auguste Rodin and Philadelphia's role in carrying forth his legacy.
The sculpted man sitting just above the heads of pedestrians on the sidewalk outside Philadelphia's Rodin Museum looms larger than any man in the flesh. Perched on a rock atop a pedestal, he leans his chin on the back of his hand, his elbow bent and resting just above the knee. Naked and quite muscular, he appears as deep in thought as a man in bronze could be. Philadelphia Museum of Art and Rodin Museum curator Joe Rischel ponders the extraordinary popularity of the thinker, of which there are 22 large-scale versions in the world.
Everyone's been in that jam themselves, so get me out of here, try as I can't crack this. Yeah. Isn't it funny that he has become the iconic thing? And Rodin knew that, and it's amazing, you know, in Rodin's tomb, staring down at Rodin's tomb, there's the thinker saying, what's going on here?
The thinker began, as did a number of Rodin's larger works, as a smaller figure on the Gates of Hell, a set of giant doors depicting characters based on the Inferno from Dante's Divine Comedy. The thinker was originally Dante. The work, started in 1880 as a commission for a new museum, was a big break for the sculptor, says PMA and Rodin associate curator Jenny Thompson.
And it was really the commission for the Gates of Hell which sort of launched Rodin's career and gave him, one of the side effects of the commission for the Gates of Hell was that he was given a studio and he was also given materials. So suddenly having that a room and materials allowed him to carry on in a much more ambitious fashion.
Although the building of that French museum itself fell through, Rodin continued work on the doors for 37 years until his death in 1917. Creating 222 figures and parts of figures, many of which seem to writhe and twist in and out of the turbulent surface of the gates.
As he sort of proceeded through his career, he saw the Gates of Hell as an extraordinary source of inspiration. So he would very often take a figure grouping from the Gates of Hell, enlarge it, and make it into an independent sculpture.
It was something that he was always working on again and again, changing it, pulling things out of it, redeveloping them.
Philadelphia Museum of Art director Timothy Rubb.
It was a kind of open lab for experimentation in a sense. And in that regard, he gave the sculptors who came later permission to work in a fundamentally different way than sculptors had worked in the past.
Although the Gates of Hell lost its original museum home, it eventually became a central feature of Philadelphia's Rodin Museum, which was created to house the extensive collection of Jules Mastbaum, who in the early 1920s had amassed the largest collection of Rodin's work outside Paris. Mastbaum hired architect Paul Cray and landscape architect Jacques Grébert, who had designed the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. David Brownlee, professor of history of art at the University of Pennsylvania, says right from the start, the Gates of Hell were to be the centerpiece of the exterior, serving as an intellectual, if not actual, doorway.
It would be, in a sense, the signboard for the Rodin Museum, as indeed that great work, which brought together so many smaller works by Rodin, was a signboard for his own creative work.
Rodin's artistic success hadn't come right away. He was born in 1840 and liked to draw as a child. As a young man, he was rejected from art school, France's École des Beaux-Arts, three times. He worked as an assistant to artist Albert Carrier-Belleuse, who ran a large studio making decorative arts. He lived in Belgium for several years, went to Italy to study Michelangelo, and worked on his own sculpture. But becoming a successful sculptor was a costly endeavor.
Sculpture is very hard because to really make it, you want bronzes or marbles, and that's very, very, very expensive. So what you do is you do plaster models, you show those, hoping that the state or an individual in some cases, will actually like that well enough to invest the big money to make you famous by doing this in bronze.
Rodin created small figures in clay from which he'd make plaster casts as a way of preserving his ideas.
Many of his compositions were worked out in a fairly small scale of maybe a foot or so high. When he decided to have a piece enlarged, he would have generally an assistant enlarge it for him.
Sculptures were enlarged using a three-dimensional version of a pantograph, a mechanical instrument where one point is fixed like the point of a compass, and rotating needles measure enlargement angles. Enlarged sculptures could be carved in marble or cast in bronze by a foundry.
They would then be stamped with, you know, Rodin's name, and he would sort of very carefully study every cast to make sure that it met his exacting standards.
In 1877, his first big success mired him in controversy. A life-sized nude male figure called the Age of Bronze appeared so realistic that his critics charged that he had made a plaster cast from the model, a Belgian soldier. While the charges were disturbing, Thompson says they drew attention to his skills. Eventually, his name was cleared.
And the French state acquired a bronze version of the Age of Bronze, which then led to a number of other commissions.
He was awarded the Gates of Hell in 1880. Later works to honor historic and literary figures included the Burghers of Calais and monuments to Hugo and Balzac. While his sculpture reflected a reverence for the past, the expressive gestures and the musculature of Michelangelo and others, he broke with tradition in various ways.
Rodin sought to make works of bronze that were related to ancient models, and yet cut them off from historical narrative and storytelling so that they would speak directly as physical objects. It is the foundational modernist part of Rodin, that art can express without telling stories, that you can respond to it directly.
He often exaggerated physical features, from large muscles to clenched fingers and curled toes, to express character and emotion.
So you'll get these great sort of muscle-bound figures of someone like, you know, Adam, which has these just extraordinary muscles, sort of creating a great sense of sort of surface tension and interest in the work of art itself. And this is, for many of Rodin's contemporaries, this was very extraordinary, that he was stepping away from his model and starting to push a sort of little towards perhaps abstraction and some distortion of the figures.
Critics were also disturbed, says museum director Timothy Rubb, by the fact that some sculptures were fragments, his many works of hands, for example, while other figures appeared to be unfinished.
They seemed to be sort of trapped in the stone and not fully emerging from it. He was an artist who was deeply engaged with process as an end in and of itself, things always in the state of becoming, always capable of change, and caught in that moment.
While considered radical, as were many of his Impressionist painter friends, Rodin became internationally renowned and very successful with a variety of work from monuments to portraits. He died in 1917. Although he stipulated in his will that none of his works should be reproduced in marble, he anticipated multiple versions in bronze.
He wrote in his will that he hoped that the Musée Rodin, which he created at his death, would continue to have his works reproduced in bronze and sort of distributed throughout the world after his death.
And that's what happened with the Rodin Museum in Philadelphia. In the early 1920s, while Rodin's work fell somewhat out of fashion, collector Jules Mastbaum fell in love with the art and became an important supporter.
And perhaps the best example of his support was the fact that he funded the casting in bronze of the Gates of Hell for the first time. That was not cast in bronze during Rodin's lifetime, and he caused the first two casts to be done. One was for the Musée Rodin, and the others for the Rodin Museum here in Philadelphia.
And in return for such support, at Mastbaum's request, the Musée Rodin allowed Henri Grébert, the father of landscape architect Jacques Grébert, to carve a marble replica of Rodin's work, The Kiss, to be a centerpiece in the Philadelphia Museum's Great Hall. Although Mastbaum himself died in 1926, the museum opened in 1929 with over 600 drawings and 130 sculptures in a variety of sizes and materials created throughout Rodin's career. The building itself, designed by Paul Cray, is fronted by a replica of the gate at Rodin's home outside Paris.
The building looks on one level like an 18th century French villa, and yet inserted in the middle of it is, first of all, the Gates of Hell, my heavens, and they are framed not by genteel 18th century pilasters or columns, but by two rugged ancient Greek columns. If you look at the pedestals that Cray designed for the sculpture inside, the stone pedestals appear to be bits of classical architecture, fragments of classical architecture, complementing the fragments of Rodin's sculpture. shorn off to support the sculpture that itself seems to be fragmentary on top of it.
The Rodin Museum and its gardens embody the spirits of many who made it happen. The landscape architect who envisioned quiet gardens off a tree-lined parkway. The architect who created a classical French structure with a 20th century sensibility. A founder who dreamed of sharing the art he loved with the people of Philadelphia. And the artist himself, who would likely embrace his home away from home.
WRTI's Susan Lewis. Philadelphia's Rodin Museum on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway is open Wednesday through Monday, 10 to 5.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.